Yes. For those of you that can't see, I am missing a shoe. But there's a reason I'm missing. There's a reason I'm missing a shoe. I honestly did it for the kids who have now vacated they're here, but they're not here. But really, today's passage in Ephesians is about the things you put off and the things you put on. What was the last thing you put on today? For me, it's usually my shoe. How about somebody else? What's the last thing you put on today? Your coat? Coats. Coats and jackets. Yes, and she's turning so red. That's what dads do. I'm sorry, Andrea. I remember when I was a kid, the last thing I learned to do was tie my shoes. I remember learning to dress myself. In fact, my dad talks about it. My dad says he was so glad when I finally learned how to tie my shoes, because that was always part of the morning ritual before he would drive my sister and I to school, was that he would have to we'd line up for him to tie our shoes as we got ready to leave every morning. Dad was breakfast maker, chauffeur, and two shoe tire for my sister and I when we were little kids. In Ephesians chapter 4, it talks about how we walk through our lives with the Most High, and the things that we put and the things that we take off. Literally, it's talking about clothes. And if you want to hear a stupendous presentation of this, please sit down with Rod Eisenberg or about 20 minutes, and he unpacks a beautiful presentation about how the theme of clothes. You think, well, clothes are clothes, but actually, it's a theme that runs from literally like the opening chapters of the Bible to the concluding chapter of the Bible. It's an amazing scene. And here in Ephesians chapter 4, we have another one of these depictions of clothes. So here I am without a shoe on. So before I give myself a, it's kind of like, I feel like Katharine Hepburn in Bringing Up Baby. Remember that movie? She's going up, down, up, down. You haven't seen that? Okay, your assignment is to go to the library and get that movie. You'll laugh yourself silly. Do you remember that Sabbath a number of years ago when I preached on this same passage? I showed up in my pajama top. To kind of hide it, I wore a suit jacket over the top of it and buttoned it. Charlene Worth, though, she said, she kind of, she told me afterwards, she said, "I was a little embarrassed to come to you and say, George, do you know you're wearing your pajama top?" So to illustrate this idea of taking off and putting on, in my message, I literally took off my jacket, took off my pajama top. I had a nice clean t-shirt on underneath it with no holes. And then I pulled out my dress shirt from, you know, under the table, actually, and then put on a dress shirt. To illustrate our passage from Ephesians chapter 4. It says in verse 22, it says, with respect to your former lifestyle, you are to lay aside, that is, to literally to take off, the old self corrupted by its deceitful desires, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Take off the old stuff and put on the new. You know, took my shoe off, put a shoe on. Took off my pajama top, which was, you know, that's bedtime clothes. Not appropriate for Shabbat service. And to put on something dressed in garments that are appropriate. Again, Rod has a great presentation on describing how proper clothes is an ongoing theme in the Torah, in the prophets, in the Yeshua narratives, in the book of Revelation. Chapter 4, verse 17, Rav Shaul says, I tell you this, indeed I insist on it. He's just not saying, I have something to say. He's being emphatic here. He says, walk no longer as the pagans do, stumbling around in the futility of their thinking. They are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to hard hearts. Hard hearts. He's telling the non-Jews in Ephesus that I don't want you to live the way your non-Jewish neighbors live. He's already argued that they've come into, as Gentiles, they've come into the commonwealth of Israel, and that they're walking shoulder to shoulder with Jewish believers. But he's saying, even though you're still Gentiles, you don't have to convert to Judaism in order to be accepted by Messiah, but I do want you to have a different lifestyle. Indeed, remember earlier in chapter 4, last week we talked about how we were all to grow up. We were to become mature adults, and that he placed proclaimers and ones who were sent and prophets and teachers and shepherds in order to help the community grow, to not be children anymore that was kind of tossed around and pursuing this thing and then running over here to do this and then being distracted by every wind and teaching that comes along. They were to become mature. They were to grow to adults. Because Messiah is the head. Messiah is the leader. So we are to live in proper identity of that relationship with the head, with the leader. We have a certain responsibility. We can't act the way we've always acted before. We have to continually become mature. Here, it's not like something that is reached, like, I've gained it, I have it now, but yet it's an ongoing process. We keep growing. In chapter 6, Rav Shaul is going to talk about how we keep putting on the Spirit of God, keep on being filled with the Spirit. It's not something you receive and then you got it. You can stick it in your pocket. It's something you grow in. It's something you walk in. It's something you continue in. In the same way, responsibility in the family of God keeps growing. You keep growing to maturity. Even Rabbi Paul says in Philippians, he says, I've not even reached it yet. He says, but I keep pressing forward. I keep pressing forward to the calling, the high calling that God has set before me. Let me give you an illustration. What does it mean that responsibility comes from relationship? Do you remember when you were young? If it was like me, mom and dad gave me certain chores to do. I remember, for instance, my sister and I would rotate helping with dinner time. One would help prepare and set the table, and then the other would help do the dishes. Or what that really meant was do most of all the dishes. Both my sister and I, oh yeah, I'll help set the table. You know, that took like what, you know, 45 seconds, you know, to put some plates and cups and silverware on the table, you know, and then say, oh, do you need any help making anything? No, you know, everything's okay. But doing the dishes took a lot longer than 45 seconds. I don't know, did they just not get that? Mom and Dad, did, you know, that wasn't really like equal chores. But it was every other day, or it may have been actually every other week sort of thing. I don't remember what the rotation was. But yeah, then it'd come around, and then the other one of us would get the easier job. But it's not like we got paid for doing the work. There were chores. I remember plainly my parents saying, you're a member of this family, therefore you have certain chores to do. It wasn't something that I could say, oh, say, how much is my allowance going to go up, you know, if I mow the lawn? It was just something I was told to do because I was part of the family, and there were no questions that I could ask to get out of it. Although I do remember at a certain point, I thought mowing the yard looked so cool. And then, like, 2 years later, I didn't think it was so cool anymore. I was the one out there sweating. My point is, relationship requires responsibility. Relationship requires responsibility. Because we are in relationship in the Commonwealth of Israel, because we are in relationship with the Messiah that is over all, in all, and through all, as Rav Shaul has already said, then we have certain responsibilities. And in chapters 4 and 5 of Ephesians, Rabbi Paul lays these out for us. All these marvelous things that Messiah has done for us. He's called us. He's called us to be holy. He has selected. He's earmarked us. Well, that's great, but that means we're in relationship with him. So that means there's responsibility. To say it another way, that means we have chores to do. And the first chore that he outlines is, you aren't to act like Gentiles anymore. You're not, or to put it, this version says pagans. don't act like pagans. Don't act like the nations. Again, same Hebrew, same Greek word, pagan or nations. Don't act like the pagans do. And then he goes on with this amazing description of how they act. They stumble in the futility of their thinking, darkened in their understanding, alienated from life and God because of ignorance due to a hard heart. This is kind of amazing. If you want to understand how your next-door neighbor looks at life, their worldview, here it is. Hardness of heart comes from ignorance, which is a result of being excluded from the life of God. When you're excluded from the life of God, you walk in ignorance, and that lack of knowledge produces hard hearts. The classic example of hard hearts in Scripture is Pharaoh of Egypt. But that exclusion from the life of God is a result of a lack of understanding, which leads to your cognitive endeavors being futile. You cannot process your cognitive abilities. In this version, it says, they're darkened in their understanding. They stumble in the futility of their thinking. This is why, by the way, Yeshua says, you are in the world, but you are not of the world. You live an exile existence. You are a nomad. Literally, you're a Hebrew. You're one that has crossed over, and you're who wandered around, who had no home. You are in the world, but not of the world. We don't have this mindset because we have relationship. But we have to grow into maturity by walking out that in responsible ways. Again, relationship requires responsibilities. There are chores in the kingdom of God, just like there are chores for your kids in your house, whether they enjoy it or not. So therefore, we are to, according to verse 22, we are to put off that old person that's corrupted due to deceitful lust. So oftentimes, I only think of lust in terms of sexuality. Maybe coveting, coveting things, stuff. But here, Rav Shaul says that lust lay at the root of all that we should jettison and set aside. We have been corrupted by these lusts in our lives. We're to set these off. And in comparison to that, take off the pajama top and put on the dress shirt. Put the shoe back on the foot. We are to put on the new person that is created in accordance with true holiness, verse 24. So he's juxtaposing these two ideas. Take this off and put this on. We have to be clothed. We have to be clothed appropriately. It's interesting that the phrase to be like God in verse 24 is a literal quote from Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. The Greek phrase there is the same as the Septuagint translation of Genesis 1, where it says that we are created in God's likeness, created in God's likeness, male and female. Genesis 1:28. Here is the exact same Greek phrase. We are to put on the new person created to be like God, created in God's likeness. That's why elsewhere Paul says we are to be new creations. We are new creations in Messiah. We are made all new again. And we put that on and we walk in it. It is so amazing, the transformative power of God in our lives, but it just doesn't happen. We participate in that process. There is a responsibility. We do play a role in our own salvation. That's a little theological point. We can discuss more if you desire. We put on the likeness of God in true holiness. Okay, next, in the next several verses, Rav Shaul uses several examples of the things that we are to take off. First, he says, take off lying. Instead, each person is to speak the truth to his neighbor. It's literally a quote from Zechariah chapter 8. He says, don't lie. Take off lying. That's a garment that's only going to weigh you down. Take that off. Instead, speak truth to your friend, to your neighbor. Number two, he said, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Anger. Anger danger. Don't be angry. Don't be angry. Take that off. That's a garment you don't need in your closet. It says, he even quotes the Torah where it says, don't let the sun go down. I used to think, I'd always heard this expressed, and therefore I thought that this had something to do with not going to bed angry, which is really good advice, if you can do that. Sometimes, you know, in relationships, you know, with family members or spouse or parents, how do you just let go of that? I remember when I got married, someone gave me some good advice. They said, a hug breaks the ice. A hug breaks the ice. He went on to tell me that you can't have this posture, a boxing, fighting posture, when you embrace someone, because you open yourself up. You can't be angry and take this posture, either physically or emotionally. Let the anger go. A hug breaks the ice. But I came to recognize that that's not actually what the verse is really saying. It's nice not to go to bed angry, but in the book of Leviticus that we're beginning in our Torah readings right now, often we see when one brings a sacrifice to the Lord, it says that you will be unclean until evening. You are to bring a sacrifice and you will be unclean. That doesn't mean dirty. like you need a bath, that means spiritual uncleanness. I wish we could come up with a word in English that better said that than clean, because to us, clean means like there's no dirt under my fingernails. You would be unclean to evening. In the Jewish calendar, in the Jewish reckoning, when does a day start?
Evening,
when the sun goes down. In other words, Rav Shaul is saying, he's not saying don't go to bed angry. He's saying don't take your anger into the next day when the sun goes down. Leave it in that day and begin a new day without anger. So he says take off lying. He says take off anger. The third thing he says to take off is theft. Don't steal. Don't steal. In fact, he even has an encouragement. The one who steals must work. Rav Shaul must have a perspective that if someone has time on their hands to steal, they must have time on their hands to do something constructive. Thank you. Instead, he must work doing something useful with his or her hands. I used to live in a city that had a small religious TV station. It was in the days before digital, when it was much easier with some simple analog equipment, you could start up a television station. And the digital revolution complicated a lot of that process. The TV station was literally run by ex-cons and homeless people. And they had a commercial that they played all the time that actually emphasized this. And their tagline for their TV station was, "Whoever steals should no longer steal, but work diligently with their hands." And they would teach these individuals how to run electronic equipment and how I thought, well, that's kind of cool. They're being they're being taught a trade, and they are being impacted by all these different religious programming that they're editing and producing and so forth. Don't steal. Do something constructive with your hands. And it's interesting that the verse goes on to say, so that they will have something to give to others. So that they will in turn be able to be a blessing. He's even talking about the antithesis of theft. Instead of taking, you learn to give. Instead of snatching what isn't yours, you learn to give away what is yours. It's a beautiful idea about how, again, Paul is telling us to take something off we don't need. This is weighing me down. I don't need this habit of stealing, of lying, of anger. The fourth thing that we're told to take off is in verse 29. Don't let any harmful word come out of your mouth. In the book of Jacob, we're told that the tongue is the most powerful part of your body. Stronger than your muscles. Stronger than your round kick. Your tongue is so small, but it's so powerful. And Jacob uses the description that tiny parts are really, like a tiny spark can set the entire southern Appalachian Mountains on fire, like happened last November. A little spark can set a massive forest fire. A little rudder on a boat can turn the ship. And so our tongue is powerful. We can either destroy people or we can build them up. Your tongue is powerful. Don't let any unwholesome words come out of your mouth. Take that off. You don't need that in your life. You don't need to be destructive in your words. As I like to say, also, the tongue is in a wet place. It can be slippery when wet. You can slip and say something wrong. Guard your words. Guard your words. Don't let it be slippery. And Saul says, the antithesis, he said, but only speak what is beneficial for building. Remember, Ephesians is about building the community of God in a cosmological level. Only speak what is beneficial for building others up so that it gives grace to those who hear it. I think that means not only the person being built up, but others as well. Others as well. When we tear others down, even when they're not in their presence, the person that listens to those words are also negatively impacted. You're still speaking evil about someone, even if they're not in the room. It's something that we have to diligently work on in our lives. Take that off. Take off unwholesome words. And then finally, the fifth thing that we are to take off is offending God's Spirit. Offending God's Spirit. Verse 30 says, do not grieve Ruach HaKodesh, the Spirit of God's holiness, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Don't grieve the Spirit. Here again, in each of these examples, Rabbi Paul is quoting the Torah and the prophets. Here he's quoting Isaiah chapter 63, which tells how God brought Israel out of Egypt in the Exodus and cared for them and led them, provided for them as he was redeeming them from their life of slavery. Isaiah 63 verse 10 says, but they offended his spirit. They offended his spirit by their actions. Paul's telling us that's something we don't need to wear. We don't need that in our closet. Take that out. Grieving, offending the Spirit of God. Instead, we're to recognize that we are sealed by God's Spirit. And I wish Julia, I don't know what happened to Julia. I'd like her to have been present. I would have had to have asked her earlier. Julia, if you didn't know, Julia loves little animals. She's had ducks and geese. And she could tell you about how a young duck or a young goose imprints on the mother to learn how to waddle and where to go. And even in a big flock, the little chick knows which one is its mother. They all look alike to me, but they don't look alike to them. They've imprinted on the mother. The mother's identity has been sealed. It's another way of saying imprint. The mother's identity's been sealed on that little chick. And Rav Shaul's using that same language here. We've been sealed by God's presence. It's imprinted on us. The Spirit of God is imprinted in our lives. So we don't need to grieve and hurt and offend God's presence. Which, by the way, all these things do. Lying, unwholesome words, anger, and theft. Don't offend God. Don't wear that garment. Instead, how are we to live? Ephesians 4:32. This was one of the very first scripture verses that my sister, the other lady in my life, my sister first learned. Ephesians 4:32. I remember even as like a 3 or 4 year old, she could quote this verse. Be kind to one another. Tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as Messiah, God in Messiah, has forgiven you. Kindness, graciousness, which is the idea of tender-hearted, and forgiving. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted to one another. Forgiving one another. I once had an idea when I was in seminary. Someday I'll do a teaching series, a preaching series, on all the places in it's mostly in the writings of Rav Shaul, Paul. He loves this word, one another. In Greek, it's just one word. I thought it'd be great to do a series of messages on that one another, because it's always about our relationships. What kind of relationship? And here that's repeated. Be kind to one another. Tender-hearted to one another. Forgiving one another. You know what? These are really like the fruit of the Spirit, right? In Galatians, which is another letter written by Rav Shaul, there are what he calls, in that passage, 9 fruit of the Spirit. What are they? Can you shout those out to me? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, goodness, self-control. Very good. You guys even said them like almost in order, I think. You guys are really good. 3 thumbs up. I kind of think here it's the same idea. He didn't mention 9 here, and he didn't use that label. So instead, walk in the fruit of the... Remember earlier, verse 17, he said, don't walk like this. Here he's saying, be kind, be tenderhearted. He could say, here's how you're to walk. It's a short version. Here he has kind, he has tender-hearted, which is like gentleness, and he has forgiving. You know what? All three of these appear in Exodus chapter 34 in the attributes of God. When Moses is there on Mount Sinai and Moses says to God, I want you to reveal yourself to me. I want to know who you are. I want to see you. I want to know your presence. And so God reveals his character. Moses doesn't see his image and his form. That's kind of expressed by the way he says it. Sees his backside, his afterburner. God reveals his character. In Jewish tradition, there are 13 of those things that God reveals to Moses. Here are three of them, and all three of these are mentioned. Gracious, kind, forgiving. This is the character of God. The fruit of the Spirit is by the fruit of the Spirit, by the way, is God's character. Those nine things are also the attributes of God. We are to put on God's attributes, his character. Take off the garments that don't line up this way. Anger is a huge one. Malice, bitterness. Maybe you're the type that doesn't explode with anger. Maybe you're the type that turns the anger inward. That's called bitterness. Get rid of all bitterness, verse 31. Get rid of all bitterness. And instead, put on God's character. Put on his identity. Put on his traits. After all, that's exactly what verse 24 told us to do. But put on the new person created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. As we grow to maturity, let us strive to build in ourselves, in our families, in our relationships, in our relationship with the Most High, let us strive to put on God's character, who he is, and to take off those things we don't need. You don't have to walk in anger. You don't have to lie. You don't have to say unproductive things about others, to others. Be kind to one another, compassionate, tender-hearted, forgiving one another.